Birth, the Grand Division, Chapter 5. Quantitative language is not natural to most people. It is a passive mode of speech that allows the object to speak for itself. Even the adjectives must be explained. One cannot just say, "It was very hot." You must say something like, "The temperature was measured with a Fluke Model 62 infrared pyrometer to be 522 degrees Celsius, plus or minus 2 degrees." In a way, it is exhausting. In another way, it is liberating, because the person reading the document can follow a researcher down the path of an experiment to gather data proving a hypothesis. Prejudices or assumptions or missed opportunities could be easily observed that could reveal causation. A very trained or intuitive observer could make a correction and tune the process to a defensible answer. That is what creating a thesis is all about. Caltech was one of the most respected and admired institutions of higher learning in the world. Its staff and grad students were often, if by nothing else by blessed proximity, part of numerous space and Earth programs run by the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. There were more than 75 active space programs, all of which the American participation came in whole or in part through JPL. Dr. Wesson was finally a full professor with tenure after President Riker recognized her accomplishments and recommended that the appointment be extended to her. She had two grad students with extremely unique and valuable talents. Rhino was a Samoan of exceedingly large stature. Not a particularly gentle giant, he was gifted with the ability to play football, which earned him a full scholarship to play for a college with a short path to the pros. That is, until his unfortunate and untimely encounter with a poorly handled Land Rover on a rainy evening. His 350-pound frame could accelerate in under 4.7 seconds to 40 yards, and he was terrifically hard to stop once he got moving that fast. Tao Tulu Leti Tao Le'alo was his Samoan name, with one of his family serving as the chairman of the Public Service Commission of Samoa. His nickname was how everyone knew him. Still, as a fast and virtually unstoppable defensive back, he was only known by the teams he played on or against, and by the scouts who wanted to sign him onto a pro team. He really became famous after the wreck, when the sports programs noticed the irony. Maybe a Land Rover can take the charge of a Rhino, but the Rhino could not take the charge of the Land Rover, they said on nearly every channel that could fit the story into their programs. His football career and dreams were over, but he turned his attention to physics and geology. He was added to the team of graduate students for Dr. Loretta Wesson, where he excelled after being challenged to use hundreds of thousands of seismograms, produced a great taxpayer expense by the U.S. Geological Survey to examine planetary core geology. Le'ai se fa'afitauli, he replied in Samoan. He really didn't speak Samoan much anymore, but that meant no problem, and usually got a good response from people who thought the language sounded cool. Girls liked it. Rhino began the daunting task of manually entering and correlating data gathered during earthquake events. Months turned into years, as he developed and maintained the system by which the raw data could be treated. His statistical methods improved to accommodate for the fact that different instruments were used for each gathering point. He developed designs of experiments to remove confounding measurement characteristics. He developed scatter plots against solar flares, geomagnetic storms, and even gathered information from the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatories in Hanford, Washington, and Livingston, Louisiana. The LIGOs were not running all the time, and they rarely operated at the same time. But the baseline for planetary vibrations could be plotted against the known gravitational waves passing through the Earth, which, helped complete the picture of what the inside of the planet actually looked like. For years, this was a source of possible embarrassment for the institution. Dr. Wesson's results were published as they arrived, but the direction of her multidisciplinary research was leading to a place of new understanding that might awaken the consciousness of mankind. It was not apparent to the rather small and eclectic geological society, because they had never put the data in such a model before. They had a false idea about how planets form, and that was fine with Semyaza. He knew that once humans could understand the symbiotic relationship between the spirits of humans and the consciousness of the planet itself, that it would be nearly impossible for him to keep them at war with one another. It was best left as a mystery and a secret. Still, there was an undertow to the wave of consciousness that was beginning to pull harder and harder every day. He could feel it. Dr. Wesson was driven by it. Hundreds of millions of people around the world tried their best to express what they were feeling with their hearts, but the words were just not there yet. It would not be long before the wave would crest, and only the awake and empowered would be ready to ride that wave. The rest of the planet would be crushed by it. People from all over the world talked about paranormal scientific ideas like hollow earth theory. They wrote stories about intelligent life inside the planet. They had conferences and expos and wrote blogs about the urge they have to know more about why humans seem to have such a powerful connection to a little blue orb floating around a main sequence sun on the outer rim of the Milky Way galaxy. History showed that every time a culture expressed an understanding of this relationship, they were wiped out through brutal and swift genocide. The Druids, the Cathars, and thousands of small groups that incorporated the reverence for the earth into their religions were hunted down and destroyed by the armies of man, led by churches. In those days, science was religion. They were the same. The dogma that burned explorers at the stake and kept genius in fear for its life also kept man in the dark for millennia. During the Renaissance, the church was separated from science. America was a grand experiment where the importance of rights given by God was prioritized. But government's historic role in abridging or abrogating those rights was undeniable. Still, the dogma of old was carried over into the scientific community of the new. The high priests just became professors, and the craft of canonizing thought was maintained by peer review groups and affiliated publications. Provoking the ire of these institutions was like being burned at the stake for offering a priest a view through the eyepiece of the telescope that would prove that Earth orbited around the sun. Semyaza made sure that the successful and wealthy sources of grant funds and endorsements were made even more powerful and prestigious as they suppressed the ideas that might allow mankind to become cognizant of his origins in the stars or his symbiosis with planet Earth. The more Rhino entered the data, the more evident the true picture was becoming. Like a hologram, the overall shape and extent of the picture came early on, but each earthquake yielded a few more dots to the image. Slowly and surely, the image allowed the observer to see what was going on inside the planet. There were vast oceans and tall mountains. There was a solid iron crystal core that was spinning at the center of an electromagnetic center of an undulating crust that was much thicker and much more dynamic than ever before imagined. The differential created an enormous magnetosphere that could protect the surface of the planet from cosmic and solar radiation in such a way so as to allow organic life to exist on the surface as well. It was beautiful and rare, and no one except for Rhino and his professor knew about it. The invitation by President Riker to Camp David was supposed to be a fact-finding mission about a prophesied Earth transition. It did not turn out the way anyone could have planned. Semyaza controlled armies and navies and world leaders in every nation, and he meant to keep this information from reaching the president. Although he could not see the future, living for 50,000 years and ruling over the capture of hundreds of billions of souls on numerous worlds provided perspective that afforded a distinct advantage over mortals. He also knew the ultimate folly of coming out in public and going to war with humans. He and his fallen angels had tried that before. Humans breed like rabbits, but they have qualities about them that are hard to fight. The seed of Abraham, in particular, had authority and capability to draw on knowledge and will that was difficult to penetrate. Oh, they could be tempted easily enough, but they could right themselves like a capsized boat in rough water. They helped one another and were quick to forgive, which required constant maintenance to conquer. Then there was the alliance that they had with the Creator. When it became necessary, that alliance could deliver cataclysmic force to a planet and wipe everything the Nephilim had built out in a few days. Rebuilding that world was of no consequence to a timeless being, but still the graduation of innocent souls was a loss for the Dark Prince, Lucifer. Lucifer's encounter with Eve in the Garden of Eden produced another race of humans. These genetics made the perfect home for billions upon billions of dark spirits. They also bred prolifically and filled the ranks of armies with perfect soldiers, willing to do anything to please their generals. They were easy to train because they so thoroughly enjoyed killing and inflicting pain on others. Still, there was no victory in this. They belonged to Lucifer from the moment they were born, for the most part. Oh, there were a few that could change their hearts to goodness, but for the most part, they either killed or tolerated the killing. The miracle team auspiciously came together just after the first giant waves smashed Deepwater Horizon in the Gulf of Mexico. They avoided destruction over the upper desert above Victorville, California, and they survived the assault deep inside Raven Rock Mountain at Site R by secret forces inside the army itself. The information made it to the president through an ancient order inside the Secret Service, and he fulfilled prophecy by breaking the sixth seal and explaining to the whole world the concept of the union of the polarity. He explained that Earth was constructed of two parts, one lower vibrational or temporal in nature and the other higher vibrational or spiritual in nature. Now, after several millennia and in accordance with cosmological signs and wonders, it was coming apart. The message began resonating with thousands of small pockets of light around the world that had already suspected something was terribly wrong with the condition of the global economy. Lucifer's goal for Earth was clear. He wanted to capture the entire living population away from the Creator. The best method for achieving that goal was left up to Semyaza and his team of fallen angels. They had tried, unsuccessfully, to defeat humans in open war. Semyaza's vastly superior forces could wipe out whole nations in a few days, but the ability for the human spirit to live again in another physical incarnation made victory impossible. Killing the innocent resulted in nothing but delays in Lucifer's plan. After millennia on Earth, more than half his soldiers were killed or captured by humans. Humans were able to learn quickly and also could not be relied upon all the time to fight one another. The strategy adapted. After nearly 6,000 years with poor yields from the human race, to supply a technology explosion, allowing the planet to support nearly 9 billion souls alive at the same time, Semyaza and his team of 200 worked behind the scenes to make men choose darkness over light. Weapons sometimes fell into the wrong hands and then were used against the Watchers. The ballista was a weapon used in the days when Roman soldiers hunted giants, which were descendants of a breeding program the Nephilim had tried with humans. The 30-pound sharpened bolt could be launched with great power from a four-wheeled crossbow, piercing the chest plates of giants, reaching vital organs. Humans would lure the giants into open battle and then roll forward with these weapons and destroy them. Several Watchers were killed with this weapon when driven into sharp canyons with a series of flaming motes. Now humans had much more powerful weapons that had been taught to them by the Watchers. The best method for capturing humans in a web of darkness and despair in modern times was with money and power and greed. The ones at the top were the easiest to imprison. Once a human acquired more wealth than they could possibly spend, no matter how hard they resisted, they would almost immediately seek their own destruction. Their misery was exquisite to behold, but what was even more enjoyable was to watch the envy and lust of the masses who wanted to be like them. It worked so well on so many worlds that the entire global economy was now structured that way. Semyaza had no mercy for them, and to his even greater satisfaction, humans almost universally had no mercy for one another. The seed of Abraham would often boast about how humble they were. They would pray and sing and give of themselves, mostly as long as the cameras were running. But when the prospect of wealth was dangled in front of them, their eyes would betray their lust. The flesh of their bodies would crave pleasure until only pain would deliver it. And then they would let the blood out of their own veins or fill their noses with enough drugs to provide relief from the darkness that pumped through their dark hearts. It was easy and rewarding. The Creator made the rules, and the terms were acceptable. Soon this planet would come apart into its two aspects, one higher vibrational and the other made of rock and metal. World after world, he would lose his children to the dark skills of his adversary. He would weep and wail, but there was nothing he could do about it, as the choice was left to the individual soul. And one by one, humans would openly and readily choose the dark path to power over his brother or sister. The human with the power would belong to Lucifer, and the human that hated the human with the power, or lusted with envy after that power, would belong to Lucifer. It was sublime, and it was fruitful beyond measure. Rhino was going to complete his own path to become a professor one day. Maybe he would go back to Samoa or to New Zealand and teach. Or maybe he would head up an exploratory team to study the Earth in greater detail. But then he thought about the evidence and where it was leading. He remembered the view out of the window of that Gulfstream jet where the two planets were coming apart. He knew that cataclysms would be great, and that perhaps the race of mankind would not exist like it does today. People that know how to do stuff will be gone. And the ones that know how to do stuff will not have the instruments or the tools or the team of others who know how to do stuff to help them. He sat there sometimes in between keystrokes and wondered about what it would be like to have to work in the garden all day and then write theoretical physics or geology at night. Who would read it? Who would even care? Then he remembered something his teacher told him when he was young. Tau Tulu, when you go to the beach to build a sandcastle, you take your tools with you. A good shovel and a small bucket are sometimes the best. Remember that the building of the castle is the reason why you are on the beach in the sun and listening to the waves of the sea. When you are finished, there's nothing left to do. It is the path of the castle that is important, not the completion of the castle. This is where the true joy in life is found. He would smile like a king with a new queen and continue to tap the keys with his enormous fingers. He was on the path, and mankind would soon know for a surety that it was a powerful opportunity and responsibility to be alive on the earth right now. Every sentient consciousness adds an energy to the population of energies that make up the average reality. Shifts to higher magnitudes of order in this average are very rare and very difficult to effect, especially when it seems like there is a much older and more powerful source of information trying to keep it in chaos. Sometimes he could almost see the formula that might explain this order out of chaos. There was something there. It was like a progression or a stepwise function. Like trying to remember the melody to a piece of music from Yes. He could hear it in his head, but he just didn't have enough information to hum it. He remembered when he was a little boy watching television game show called The Wheel of Fortune. It was like the game of Hangman, where the contestant would ask for letters and buy vowels and try to guess a phrase. It helped him learn English while watching Vanna White walk back and forth across the glittering display, turning letters over. But it was pretty stupid when he realized that the audience was full of people and Pat Sajak actually convinced them that he was interested in the answer himself. Here he was, entering letters into a computer program that placed them into a massive structure, dot by dot. Eventually, he would put in enough dots that the picture could be guessed to completion. He had three undergraduates that worked with him. They had senior projects that were part of the graduation package. It was only worth one credit hour, but in order to really impress the school, great students would put in 10 or even 20 hours a week on their senior project. Great science is half good science and half good presentation, he would say to them. They helped mostly with data entry, but one student, Lisa, had a gift. It wasn't the speed or accuracy of her entries that was so impressive. She had an ability to see things in the data long before it was entered or contorted by data hog programs that consumed so much computer time. She was tall at nearly 6 feet and lean like a runner. She didn't run, not literally. She did speak faster than anyone he'd ever met. He sometimes wondered if she even breathed. Her wide-set blue eyes would look off somewhere like she was reading something off a page in another dimension. And then the logic of her reasoning came out like a binary logic program. But this, and then she would say, and this. And then she would jam through the thought like a Boolean warrior, adding conditions and what if this along the way. It was beautiful to watch. It was beautiful to see her move her hair away from her face and then laugh in the middle of a sentence. And then she would be there again, right behind those eyes. She would look at him, and his heart could hear every word she said. The struggle to assimilate the information was terrifying at times. It was so much work to discover something huge about something so small that no one cared about it. The rate and power of earthquakes was increasing. 2 years ago, there were barely 2,000 earthquakes a year, with less than 100 over 5.0 on the metric tensor. They used to utilize the Richter scale, but they were gathering data on distance from the surface and the direction of the waves. There were pressure waves and shear waves and shadow waves that no one really understood yet. Now, there were nearly 2,000 earthquakes a week, and the number of quakes over 5.0 had gone up by an order of magnitude. Volcanic activity had also increased by two orders of magnitude. It seemed to indicate that there was a large gravitational body approaching the planet, but there was no astronomical data to back that up. His other two grad students were also doing co-op assignments at JPL. Their reports showed that every available room in every building was jammed with teams looking for a planet or a star, or some sort of electromagnetic force that could be responsible for this sharp increase in activity. Nothing had been discovered, in spite of multinational financial efforts to accelerate the launch of these technologies. The path was unclear and fractured. Each week a new juxtaposition would come up. Lisa would weave and dance like an esoteric composer, trying to get all the sources of energy onto one piece of music. Like a score, she could add the bass and treble clefs, and then sink the percussion into the report. It didn't belong there. It was cacophonic and irritating, but after you listen for a while, she could reveal a harmony from its harmonics that encouraged you to listen again and again. Each time another pattern would emerge, and clarity would burst upon the senses like chewing into hard candy with a tart center. All he needed to do now was to mark the path so others could follow. It was his path. It was his sandcastle. Every happy man has a sandcastle, he said to himself, and who knows? Maybe this sandcastle is just a grain of sand in a bigger sandcastle.